Thank you, everybody. And now the game where we get really accomplished people to see if they can accomplish one more little thing. A number of years ago, as is well known, legendary NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw handpicked from all the people who worked at that august organization the man he wanted to be his successor. Today, I am proud to say that I'm doing the same thing. And it's the same guy. Brian Williams is the anchor and managing editor of NBC Nightly News. He won Emmys, Murrow Awards, and a Peabody Award. We are very excited to have him here with us at Carnegie Hall. Brian Williams, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell.
Thank you.
So excited to have you here. So we're glad you're here. We wanted to talk to you about some issues that came up about the news media in the last week or so. And one of them, of course, is the Balloon Boy story. Everybody immediately cut away from everything else they were doing, and they covered the Balloon Boy live, breathlessly, for hours. What was your feeling about how the media reacted to the Balloon Boy story?
I've never been so happy to say the following. I was on vacation with my wife.
There you are.
God's honest truth, but I have to also be honest, we were on vacation with two other couples, and we were coming in from outside to watch the coverage.
There you are.
And because I can't go anywhere anymore, we were on safari in Africa last year, and like blackberries work. So you can't get away from the news business, and we kept coming in to check the coverage. It was the lead story that night on NBC Nightly News. All three of the network evening newscasts, all the cables went to it. So, I mean, there are those of us who are thinking adults who were kind of checking out the coverage, and we've got to be intellectually honest about it. Isn't that the NPR credo?
The NPR credo, we've got to be intellectually honest about this?
I saw it over the door as I...
Yes.
Okay.
Someday,
Brian,
and someday we will.
Yeah. Brian, as an anchor, were you insulted when Falcon Heaney said off-air, who the hell is Wolf Blitzer?
I couldn't believe that, actually.
Really? Who does that little kid think he is?
Yeah. He said that. It was hilarious.
Yeah. You think that's the first newscaster name that any little kid, any boy would learn?
Yeah, I mean, like...
Wolf.
Well, no, he was insulted to be talking to cable and not network.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I would think that any of the Heaney children would already know the anchor depth chart by heart.
We talked about this, Falcon.
Do you think that the news networks made a mistake in giving it such wall-to-wall coverage? Did they not have a choice? And do you think that they, or I should say you, have learned anything the next time some balloon goes off with an alleged boy inside?
Well, I mean, I'm not here to defend everybody's collective judgment. I will say that it was worrisome and horrifying to a lot of people, and at some level interesting as hell that this Jiffy Pop container... And let's face it, that's the image that was eluding us when we went to describe this to our loved ones. Just picture the handle and rubbing it gently across an open flame.
More fun to make than it is to eat.
Thank you, Paula Poundstone, ladies and gentlemen.
The other big media news item was, of course, the White House's campaign, whatever you want to call it, against Fox News. And whatever you might think or not think about Fox News, there are those who say, including Jake Tapper of ABC News, that it is just absolutely inappropriate for the White House to say, you're a news organization, you're not, and therefore we're not going to treat you the same as the others. What do you think of that?
Well, I think they've said that in another way by inviting certain blogs, bloggers, and news organizations into the briefing room and, say, primetime news conferences, people who had never had a seat at the proverbial table. Mm-hmm. I will say, if you're going to kill the king, kill the king. I can't speak for them, and I haven't spoken to them about this issue because, again, I was on vacation, thankfully. But I think they might probably, in the end, want this one back. Whatever you want to say about Fox News, as I told a colleague this week, when I go to cover major events, conventions, explosions, what have you, you know, we all end up cheek by jowl, side by side. They are there with every other news organization. Primetime in cable, it's kind of like the Munsters. It's all different kinds of people.
Is Glenn Beck Grandpa Munster?
It's all different kinds of people.
Ultimately makes sense.
And many people have said the problem with media these days is when you wake up in the morning, there's one, if not more than one network that already agrees with you.
Isn't it true, though, that every White House in their own way pressures news organizations, condemns one, praises another, tries to manipulate and affect coverage?
Oh, the Nixons really wrote the book on that, didn't they?
They really did, yeah. As they did on so many other things.
But I covered Bill Clinton. I covered the two middle years, the overlap years of the Clinton White House. I got home one night. I am making dinner in the kitchen with my wife, actually straining hot pasta over the sink, and I got a call from, shall we say, a senior White House official with a thick Arkansas accent who was ballistic. And I had never, A, received a call at home from a president, silly me, and B, had never been yelled at by one. And it's a briefly thrilling experience.
Really?
I really did cradle the phone in the crux of my arm. Now, furthermore, I got to tell you, I couldn't believe it.
Did that affect the way you then went on to cover the Clinton White House?
No, you go into work next day, you try to call balls and strikes and call them as you see them. That's what my job is. His job is to be president, and he gets to complain about press coverage. I get to cover him the next day. That's right. How it works.
So maybe this offensive, whatever you want to call it, isn't that unusual.
Well, we'll see. But I think it's as old as the presidency itself.
Right.
You think that Washington called people up and complained?
He had to go over to their house.
Well, yeah. you're
town crier.
Yeah.
Whoop his ass.
I know.
I'll have you know these are, in fact, my teeth.
I know you're being funny, but cell service was awful back then.
No, sorry. You have become known, in addition for your good looks, wisdom, and new sense, for your music blogging, which is something that I don't think, say, Walter Cronkite did in his day as a leading anchorman.
No, that he was known to get down to some indie stuff. I like the beat. It's got a good backbeat.
And that's the way
it is.
And that's the way it rocks.
An approach reminiscent of the Buzzcocks.
Anyway, no, but you have a music blog which is called
Brytunes.
Brytunes.
Okay.
Wow, that's really
okay.
Cute.
Let's have it.
By the way, I knew you called it that. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah. The great thing about radio is they can't tell where you're gesturing. Yeah. Anyway. I didn't name the thing. I didn't name it. The company named it. I went along willingly.
What company? What company named it?
Oh, you know, I work for the military industrial company.
The blog masters.
But I love music, and I have, you know, I got an iPod like everybody else, and mine has about 7,000 songs on it.
But don't you mean Brypod?
Your Brypod.
Turn on my Brypod to continue. And can we talk about the disjointed 4-second pieces of jazz music in NPR commercial breaks?
Are you upset with that?
I just love it. Oh. I'm Noah Adams. You know, it's just, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing? Really?
So then when Noah Adams begins to speak, you're annoyed because it cut the song off?
I mean, really? What is that? It's like a little clarinet. Let's get going, you know?
Do you know that those 4 or 5-note pieces are commissioned by NPR? Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Those
Excuse
songs
me.
Are actually written for interstitial music.
Okay.
Put that on the old Brypod.
Okay.
There we go. Brian Williams, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the very worst act ever to play this stage.
On October 25th, 1944, almost exactly 65 years ago today, Florence Foster Jenkins sang very badly on this stage here in Carnegie Hall to a sold-out auditorium. She remains legendary in American music because basically she never seemed to notice that the entire audience was always laughing at her, sometimes quite loudly. We're going to ask you three questions about Florence Foster Jenkins. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yeah. What did I ever do to piss you off?
Have you ever heard of Florence Foster Jenkins?
Oh, Flo-Fo.
Yeah. Carl, who is Brian Williams playing for?
Brian is playing for Eleanor Russell of Brooklyn, New York.
So here's your first question. Florence Foster Jenkins was famous in her day for her talents, or lack thereof, earning her a nickname, which was what? A, De Liedermoorder, or the Song Killer. B, the Diva of Din. Or C, the Mad Nightingale of 45th Street.
Let's take them in order. First of all, were we speaking a lot of German in the United States in 1944?
Well, they were in music circles. They, you know, the musical terms.
I'm just saying. Our boys were over there.
All right.
Working hard to finish up in Europe before our boys were finishing up Japan. All right. So that's just my reasoning.
All right.
And about the third option, we're not on 45th Street. Nice try.
She only played here once.
So, you know, by default, and knowing something about the headline writers of that era, I'll choose the middle selection.
The Diva of Din.
Yep.
A remarkable showing. You're correct, sir. She was known as the Diva of Din, among other titles. She was also known, for example, because of her inability to stay on pitch while singing, as the Queen of the Sliding Scale. Next question. Florence Foster Jenkins almost always performed along with whom? A stuffed monkey she called Phineas. B, a trio composed of her husband, her uncle, and her doorman. Or C, her loyal and patient accompanist, Cosme McMoon. Suss that out, Williams.
I can't wait to hear the anti-Phineas logic.
This guy, you can't see him in the audience. This man is sweating more than Ray Fiennes in Quiz Show. He is on the spot.
I'll spare you my circuitous reasoning. But I'll go with the third and final choice.
Cosme McMoon?
Yes.
You're correct again. Cosme McMoon was known for his amazing ability to switch keys, as the singer did, to add in some bars when she needed them. And as one concert goer said of him, quote, he hit no parallel in history when it came to the control of facial muscles. I want to see if you can be perfect here. Now,
as opposed to Wincy McMahon, who didn't get the gig.
Yeah. Now, Ms. Jenkins, or Madam Jenkins, as she liked to be called, ended her career here at Carnegie Hall. They had been urging her for years to do it, but she never had the courage. She finally gained the courage to play Carnegie Hall only because she said she had improved her singing. How? Was it A, she was in a taxicab accident, which she said had the effect of finally allowing her to hit a high F? B, she decided to replace the words in the German and Italian arias she sang with a series of la-la-las, which she said made it easier on her? Or C, she went completely deaf?
Wow.
What is it with you people and the Germans?
What do you mean, you people?
This is...
We had no idea you were from South Carolina.
All right.
Somewhere Jim DeMint is.
Exactly. There you go.
I think the cab ride, I think the deafness are implausible. I'll go with the middle selection.
She just started saying la, la, la instead of
the words. I think so. It worked for Van Morrison starting in the 60s.
God, if only they'd had auto-tunes back then. No, no, she could have been a star.
Yeah. In fact, in this case, I'm afraid you were not correct. It was the taxi cab accident.
I was just trying to be mortal.
So human.
Carl, how did Brian Williams do in our quiz?
Brian had two correct answers, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Eleanor Russell.
Well done. Well done. But listen, before we let you go, Florence Foster Williams did her concert here in 1944. She died a month thereafter. And we've had our fun with her, but I think it is only fair and only right that we allow her voice to once again ring out in this august temple of music.
And a reminder, cover your watch crystals.
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Florence Foster Jenkins.
Ooh, there's the cab accident.
That, of course, wow. That, of course, was Ms. Jenkins doing the role from Mozart's The Magic Flute. She was singing the role of the drag queen of the night.
And that was from iHome directly off the Bripod. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, why couldn't we have used that on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
I think so. What's funny is, and I just want to say this, when she sang live right here, the audience in front of her had the same reaction you did. The laughter was, people were weeping. They were laughing so hard. And she never noticed. She never noticed, which is why they loved her, because she was immune to them.
I suddenly don't feel as honored to be here.
Yeah. Well, like I said, anybody can rent the hall. Brian Williams is a managing editor and host of NBC Nightly News, and as far as I am concerned, the funniest man to jockey an anchor desk. Brian Williams, thank you
so much.
Thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you.